Because the scripture does not teach that Jesus is coming for his throne, but that Jesus is coming from his throne.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And this says, in fact, a little bit less about the second coming and more about how it is right now. That we are the church that confesses the ascension that Jesus has, remember, as he promised, that he has gone to prepare a place for us. And that even now he is sitting on the throne and he is working by his word, by his baptism, by his body and blood to prepare us for that place. So that when he comes back to rescue us.
You can listen to Pastor Wolfmiller's teaching, Making the Case for a Biblical Approach to the End Times, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a recommended donation of $300 to Issues Etc. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Perhaps you saw the Washington Post column titled, Where in the Bible Does It Say You Can't Be Transgender? Nowhere. Well, we're going to be responding to it here in the next few minutes of Issues Etc. On this Thursday afternoon, September the 1st, Pastor Hans Feeney joins us. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled How to Make the Bible Support Any Sexual Practice in 3 Easy Steps. Hans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Ordinarily, the advocates and the warriors in the sexual revolution just dismiss what the Bible has to say on sexual ethics. Do they do any better when they actually open the Bible and try and use it?
No, their arguments are not terribly compelling when they do so. I suppose part of the problem is that it's not really necessarily a monolithic group that you're dealing with here. So to some extent, you have just kind of hardcore secularists and people who are very hostile towards Christianity in general and towards religion in general. And then you have some folks who I think believe that they can somehow meld these two things together or join these two things together, this kind of contemporary ideas about sexual progressiveness as well as Christianity and some elements of the historic faith.
All right, so the example that's before us is the Washington Post column, Where in the Bible Does It Say You Can't Be Transgender? Nowhere, which in itself contains an implicit argument, which is if something isn't mentioned explicitly in the Bible, then it's A-okay with God, right?
Yeah, that seems to be the presupposition there. So I had a little bit of back and forth on Twitter with the author of the article, who insisted that the Bible is silent on transgenderism, which of course is an argument you can only make if you define transgenderism in such a way that of course the Bible doesn't speak about it because no one on the planet has ever spoken about it before. Whereas if you just simply start with the rational and scientific and also the vast majority of the entire human history looking at the issue through that lens and simply say, well, people who are XY are males and the others are females, and those who have male genitalia are males, and those who have female are female, and therefore men putting on women's clothing and the verses in the Bible that prohibit that would obviously speak to the issue. They try and kind of pull this trick where they'll say, well, no, that's addressing a completely different issue altogether because transgender has to do with your expression of your inner gender rather than dealing with sexual characteristics. So, of course, it's a completely different thing. Therefore, the Bible doesn't speak about it, and yes, as you noted, therefore we should, of course, immediately assume that if the Bible doesn't speak about a practice, doesn't speak specifically to a practice, that it must therefore be perfectly fine in the eyes of God. And then, of course, as he does with the verse about God creating mankind, male and female, he tries to, of course, insist that even though transgender isn't mentioned in there, the male and female covers all expressions of gender identity. So, therefore, of course, it's implied. So, on the one hand, Moses isn't addressing it in Deuteronomy chapter 22 because, of course, this wasn't even a concept that people were aware of at that time. But the same Moses is most certainly addressing it implicitly in Genesis.
So, having his cake and eating it too, there.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's kind of walk through this slowly. You give an example of you get caught. I'm sure this must be from actual experience. You get caught copying your classmates' answers on a test by your teacher. And if you employ the method of those in the sexual revolution trying to use the Bible to advocate for transgenderism, what do you do when the teacher pulls you out into the hallway?
Right. So, yeah, this didn't come from personal experience necessarily, but it's definitely what I would have done if I would have gotten caught for this, which is that you create a false distinction or a fallacious distinction that's exactly the same thing as what's forbidden, but you claim that it's different and claim that because it's different, it's not what it was forbidden. So the teacher drags you out into the hallway and says, "Hey, look, I told you at the beginning of the year that that if you got caught cheating, you'd fail the class." And you go, and so she says, "And look, I saw you copying answers. Copying answers is cheating. Therefore, you fail the class." And you say, "Oh, no! I wasn't copying answers. My friend Jason and I were sharing answers. So we came up with our own system of sharing. Our system of sharing may look to the untrained eye, and to the ignorant person, the unlearned person, it may look to be the same thing, but really it's an entirely different concept born from a very different style of learning that a few unique specific people may have that's just as valid as every other person's style of learning and very just as valid as every other person's style of taking tests." And so we were answer sharing rather than answer copying. And because you never actually forbade answer copying, then it really appears that the syllabus is silent on this issue, and I think I should be able to go ahead and get the A that I so clearly deserve.
And that would not fly with your teacher?
Probably not, no. I had some pretty nice Spanish teachers, but I don't think that would have worked on any of them.
Okay. The second step in this process employed by the sexual revolutionaries, you kind of talked about a little bit before, and that is you just say the Bible isn't clearly talking about the issue when it completely is talking about the issue. Take us through that.
Right, yeah. So the argument that transgender advocates will make is they say that that human beings have a gender, which is this is why it is I try to be pretty consistent with this in my congregation. Anytime ever anyone ever talks about people having a gender, tell them that the correct word is sex. If you go, this is my practice when I go to the doctor's office. If I go to a doctor's office or anywhere else that has a form that tells me to fill in my gender, I cross out the word gender and write in the word sex, because human beings don't have a gender. Gender is something that is used to in language to describe feminine or masculine words. So, for example, if people have learned Spanish, there are certain words that end in A, that's a feminine word. Words that end in O are masculine. And sometimes they don't necessarily align with what you think masculine and feminine words might be. But so this idea that people have a gender is the assertion that within our very own beings, somehow there's kind of some division of our soul that's where our gender is assigned. And they'll say that for most people, their gender corresponds with their sex. So most people, if they're biologically male, will have a male gender. If they're biologically female, will have a female gender. But for some people, that's not the same. But if this happens, it's not that there's anything wrong. This is just a different expression of gender. So what they do is that anytime it fits their argument to claim that sex and gender are not the same thing, that's what they'll do. So, for example, with this passage from Deuteronomy, which forbids men from putting on women's clothing and women from putting on men's clothing, this is what the author of the Washington Post piece says. Is he says, "Well, that's talking about cross-dressing." And cross-dressing just has to do with sex. Cross-dressing is when a man who knows that he's a man puts on women's clothing, and for some reason God is forbidding that, because of course that would be an abomination to God. We're not going to even raise any questions about that. That's perfectly fine for God to forbid. But that's not what's happening with trans people. What's happening with a transgender person is that this man who looks exactly the same and has the same anatomy as the guy who got in trouble for cross-dressing, but this man in his identity is female. So he's not actually cross-dressing, because he is in and of his own soul actually a she, and is therefore only dressing the way that corresponds with his/her inner gender. So you change the idea of what's forbidden, even though it's not a real distinction. Even though the simpleness of the commandment in Deuteronomy is if you are the kind of person who has a penis, don't wear the kind of clothing that the opposite sex wears, and vice versa. So they kind of abstract that out of the equation and just make up false distinctions in order to make it appear that the Bible's not actually speaking about the issue.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest responding to a recent Washington Post column titled, "Where in the Bible Does It Say You Can't Be Transgender?" Nowhere. He is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, and creator of a comical series of videos titled Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled, "How to Make the Bible Support Any Sexual Practice in 3 Easy Steps." Stay tuned. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. TheCLCC.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Lutherans talk a lot about doctrine, liturgy, and vocation. But as Martin Luther would say, what does this mean? In a book called Didache, Issues Etc. regular guest Professor John Pless brings together the Bible, the small catechism, and the hymnal to teach the faith. He shows how what we believe is expressed in our daily lives and in our worship. You can find Didache online at emmanuelpress.us. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest responding to a recent Washington Post column titled, "Where in the Bible Does It Say You Can't Be Transgender?" Nowhere. Okay, step 3 is kind of the flip side of step 2. You say it is, say that the Bible is talking about an issue when it isn't. And you gave an example of that before. What was it?
Yeah, so the example I gave in the piece is when his article, Ariel Cruz, who wrote this piece for the Washington Post, tries to make the claim that in Genesis 1:27, so God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. He tries to make the argument that, so this is a passage that, since this issue has come up, that Christians have frequently pointed to and just said, look, the Bible states this very clearly. God creates Adam and Eve. He creates a man and a woman. These are the two sexes that there are. There's not this multitudinous list that grows even larger with the wiles of man's imagination, but rather there's just simply what God created. There's male and female. And so his take on that is, no. When Moses writes male and female, he created them. that this is like the phrase, "I am the Alpha and the Omega," so that this is not a confession that Jesus is the first and last letter of the alphabet, that he's everything in between. He is from the beginning all the way to the end, and everything in between. And so, in the same way, supposedly, when you get the words male and female, he created them. The "and" there is supposed to be an all-encompassing "and," that includes what they would call cis men on one end of the spectrum, in Adam, cis females on the other end, and then every other expression of gender and sexual identity in between, which is, of course, just utter nonsense.
So they're actually arguing in that particular case that it means God created everything from male to female.
Right, yes. Every possible conception of gender so you'd have male on one end, female on the other end, and everything falls in between. And even though there were none of these things up until 5 minutes ago, God is totally talking about them when he says this. This is kind of my joke about this before, is that this is just like playing Calvin Ball. For those who read Calvin and Hobbes comics growing up, Calvin Ball was the game that Calvin and Hobbes would play, where you would just make up rules on the fly, and generally speaking, the rules that you make up were meant to benefit you in that particular moment. It's sort of like how I think football, the way football should work, is that as soon as my team has the lead, the game should be over. Then that would really benefit me. And this is the same kind of strategy that they employ in this, where on the one hand, so you hand them a verse that says, hey, here's a verse that talks about what kind of clothes men and women should wear. And they go, why on earth would you bring that to me? This has nothing to do with what we're talking about. What a silly verse to bring up. It'd be like if you brought up regulations, concerning, dealing with animal waste, and said that this is somehow should inform our view of, our view of marriage or something of that nature. And they'd go, this has nothing to do with it. And then you go, okay, well, how do you know you're right? And they go, see here in this word "and," you see those three little letters, A and D, that encompasses all of the forms of gender that we just invented. So trust me, it's in there. And so, of course, on the one hand, the Bible doesn't talk about it because it's not a subject that was brought up around the time the scriptures were written. And on the other hand, the Bible completely talks about it whenever it could possibly be praising him. The same kind of argument that people have made with regard to homosexuality in the scriptures. So on the one hand, advocates of gay marriage will argue, well, there really was no such thing as the concept of committed, loving, gay relationships in biblical times. So all of the passages in the Bible that say men don't have sex with other men, that, of course, doesn't apply to those. But, oh, by the way, the centurion and his servant were totally in a loving, gay, committed relationship that we just said 5 seconds ago didn't exist at that time. Same thing with David and Jonathan. You'll even get some people who will argue that with Ruth and Naomi. It's just making up the rules as you go along, in order to try to win the argument.
On a side note here, Hans, there's a book that's been recently released. It appears to be advocating extramarital sex from a biblical standpoint. I think the author purports to be a Christian. Did you look into that? Does it employ any of these little tricks with the Bible?
I haven't had a chance to read the book, but yeah, I've heard the general synopsis of it. I think it's called "Good Christian Sex," and in the subtitle, "Why Chastity Isn't the Only Option." It's written by a lady who fancies herself to be a Christian pastor in some kind of liberal Protestant denomination. And yeah, I haven't read the book, but I'm fairly certain as to exactly what the argument is, which would be, the only kind of bad sex outside of marriage is, non-consensual sex, and sex where you're taking advantage of someone, or where consent is not really possible, or where it's sort of filled with lust and things of this nature, and there's a lack of commitment. But don't worry about it if you are joining yourself as one flesh. If you're taking for yourself someone whom God hasn't given to you through marriage, that's perfectly fine, and you don't need to feel bad about it. I mean, I've never been a 17-year-old girl, But I'd imagine if I were a 17-year-old girl who had grown up in the church and then started having relations with, you know, a boy I'd been dating for like 9 months, this is precisely the kind of self-justifying stuff you'd come up with, where you create this distinction between perfectly good sex outside of marriage and bad sex outside of marriage, and then you just say, well, all of the sex outside of marriage that's condemned is the bad stuff, because this concept of good, healthy premarital sex just didn't happen to exist at that time. So it looks like you can't condemn me.
Finally, with only about 20 seconds, which is worse, when the sexual revolutionaries dismiss Scripture entirely or when they manhandle it like we've talked about here in the last few minutes? About 20 seconds.
Well, I think when they manhandle it, it's worse. There's something a bit more honest if people would just say, well, we don't care what the Bible says. It has no authority over us. It has no power over us. So we're just going to kind of forge ahead and leave it in the dustbin of history. That's kind of fine for me. Obviously, I don't agree with that. But when people are making these arguments, they're not really making them because they think this is true and they want to kind of compel the world to believe this. They're saying this because they want to dissuade and they want to encourage people who are listening to them and people who are trying to find an excuse to buy into this notion and to be unfaithful to the Lord's word and embrace this worldly way of thinking. They're doing that because there's an audience that's trying to find that justification. And that, I think, is a much more troubling thing, that there are Christians out there who are hungering for this. Please tell me whatever it is I need to hear that will let me do this.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos titled Lutheran Satire, and senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled How to Make the Bible Support Any Sexual Practice in 3 Easy Steps. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Hans, thanks.
Thank you very much.
In hour two of Issues, Etc., we're going to turn to the subject of late 6th century, early 7th century Bishop of Rome, Gregory the Great. Why was he called great and still is? We'll answer that question. The church will be remembering Gregory the Great on the 3rd of September. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us for our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Isaiah chapters 13, 14, and 15.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.